Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. A lot of big names on the show this week with very different backgrounds. We talked to Mike Pence, the former vice president. We talked to the cast of Star Trek, The Next Generation, who's now the cast of Star Trek Picard, my favorite show as a kid, which was kind of wild. We get a preview of our conversation with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Rick Caruso celebrates Richard Reardon. But let's begin with Mike Pence, the former vice president of the United States, at the Nixon Library in Yorba Linda this week. Is he running for president? Certainly seems like it. He talked to us about abortion rights and his path for victory. All this happening at an energy conference. So let's start there. We are joined by the former vice president of the United States, Mike Pence, author of So Help Me God. Congratulations on the book, and welcome to The Issue Is.
Thank you, Alex. Thanks for having me on The Issue Is, and it's great to be back in California.
Yeah, and so you're here in California at the Nixon Library. We see a lot of Nixon all around us right now. And of course, Nixon, the creator of the EPA back in the 1970s. Energy is what this conference is that you're talking about today. Here in California, the governor has put in place rules to have no gas-powered cars sold in 2035 and on. The energy secretary, Jennifer Granholm, who I talked to, said that could potentially be a model for the whole nation. What do you make of that?
Well, first off, let me just say that what our administration was able to do with energy, unleashing American energy and all of the above energy strategy, really powered the economic prosperity of the Trump-Pence years. 7 million good-paying jobs, wages rising at the fastest pace in 50 years, 10 million people move from welfare to work. And the war on energy that's been waged by the Biden administration and by governors around the country, including Governor Newsom, has put a tremendous hardship on American families. Gasoline prices, while there's been some relief, been through the roof for the last 2 years, that's eaten into family budgets. And I truly do believe, as we'll discuss today here at the Nixon Library, that to revive our economy, we've got to unleash American energy as we did during the Trump-Pence years. And we've got to move away from these government mandates that actually, I think, will only serve to increase the cost on Americans, whether it be in purchasing cars or gasoline. And at the end of the day, when you think about where most electric batteries are manufactured, these mandates by the Biden administration, and even here in California, about driving Americans toward electric vehicles actually will most benefit China, where most of the batteries for electric cars are manufactured today. So what I believe in is the free market. What I believe is that this nation has been blessed with vast natural resources. We achieved energy independence during the Trump-Pence administration, became a net exporter of energy for the first time in 75 years, and that's the approach we ought to take. Let the market work, let electric vehicles develop, let alternative sources of energy develop. But we ought to have an all-of-the-above strategy. That's what's in the best interest of American families.
You're not concerned about climate change?
Well, look, I think the issue of climate change is always a question of balance and who pays. And I think the American people want to follow the science on that issue. We want to make sure that any limitations we place on our economy are also embraced by other countries around the world. But at the end of the day, we have the cleanest air, water, and land of any nation on earth. And I think that's a result of a nation that was built on the principles of freedom, of private property, of the rule of law and contract. And that's how we'll achieve a boundless future for America and a clean environment at the same time.
Another big issue is abortion rights. You have been one of the great champions in this entire country when it comes to the pro-life movement because of your administration and the justices that you appointed. Roe v. Wade was overturned. That, again, is an issue now. Do you think that mifepristone and some of these pills that result in abortions should be illegal around the country?
Well, Alex, I'm pro-life. I don't apologize for it. I couldn't be more proud to have been a part of the administration that appointed three of the justices, that sent Roe versus Wade to the ash heap of history and returned the question of abortion to the states and the American people. And I think now we are engaged in a great national debate, not only in Washington, D.C., but all across the country on the subject of the sanctity of life. And I appreciate you acknowledging our role in that. We'll, whatever the future holds for my family, we'll continue to be a voice for the unborn. But also, I want to be a voice of compassion for people that are facing crisis pregnancies. I think it's important as states move pro-life legislation that we're also seeing additional resources for women, not only during pregnancy, but after they bring that child into the world. I want to see adoption reform in the country. I believe there's a whole range of solutions that will bring greater compassion and greater outcomes for life. With regard to the question of mifepristone, you know, the Supreme Court's considering that issue this week. And the reality is that 20 years ago, the FDA exceeded its authority in approving the abortion pill. They actually used statutes that were designed for the emergency approvals. They didn't go through the ordinary processes. And women have paid the price over the last 20 years. I think of 2003, a young woman named Holly Patterson lost her life after taking mifepristone. Her parents didn't even know she was pregnant. She ended up being taken to the hospital. She'd become septic. She died. And there's documented cases of hundreds and hundreds of women who've been injured by this pill. And my hope is that the Supreme Court today will rein in the FDA, require the FDA to live under the laws of our country. And at the end of the day, I fully support efforts to take the abortion pill off the market. I'm pro-life, but I also believe that it's caused great harm for women around the country.
You're obviously considering whether to run for president or not. You say that you're praying on it. I'm curious, if you do, what do you see as your lane for success? Because obviously some of the folks who like President Trump are frustrated at you over January 6th. President Trump is frustrated at you over January 6th. Some of the folks who don't like President Trump are frustrated that you've supported him as much on pretty much everything else. What's the lane for success?
Well, I think that'd be for others to say if we choose to run. And Alex, I don't have anything to announce today.
You don't?
I will tell you.
Come on, give me something.
Yeah. I'll tell you, even here in California, we've been getting an awful lot of encouragement around the country. And I think it's twofold. Number one is I think people look at the record of the Trump-Pence administration, where we made historic investments in our national defense. We secured our border. We cut taxes, rolled back regulations, unleashed energy, created unprecedented prosperity, and 300 conservatives to our courts at every level to uphold all the God-given liberties enshrined in our Constitution. I think people want to get back to those policies. But I'm always very humbled that people recognize that the approach I've taken to politics, the premium that I've placed on trying to show respect and civility in the public debate could well be an idea whose time has come. Look, I believe that democracy depends on heavy doses of civility. And frankly, on both sides of the aisle, we've gotten away from that in Washington, D.C. And our politics is more divided today than any time in my lifetime. But I'm not convinced the American people are as divided as our politics. And I really do believe the challenge that we face in 2024 is not just to get back to the policies that were working for the American people, but ultimately to have government as good as our people. Government that treats one another the way the American people treat each other just about every day. That could create the conditions where we can take on some of the large, intractable problems that we face, whether it be the crisis at the border, the rise of China, Russian aggression, or the massive debt crisis that's facing our children and grandchildren. It's going to take a style of leadership that at least has the capacity to bring people together. And I'm always humbled when people associate me with that.
And in the book, you write about Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush, two of your heroes, who were able to do that in sort of a different era in politics, an era that you were a young man in and a part of. Lastly, just to wrap things up, you know, so much has been said about you by people who really don't know you. And I'm curious, what do you think is the biggest misconception about you? What do people get wrong about you?
Well, I you know, the American people are entitled to their own opinions, but I'm always very moved. As I've traveled around the country since I left the White House, how many people come up to me in the diner or on a street corner or after a little event and say, I didn't know you were like that.
Meaning what?
Well, I'm not entirely sure. Maybe it's that I don't, you know, I don't take myself too seriously. I love this country. I love the American people. I've got my own convictions, my own values, but to know the Pence family is to know that we show respect to every American, whatever their politics, and whether we agree on every issue. And I'm always very moved when people reflect on that. And if we choose to enter the race for the Republican nomination for president, I would do so recognizing that I'm well known, Alex, but I don't think I'm known well.
Right.
And if we enter the race, I would hope to have the opportunity, as I did in my autobiography, to let people know our hearts. I'm just a small town guy from southern Indiana that got to live the dream of serving my country in the Congress as governor, as vice president. My grandfather immigrated to this country. My dad was a combat veteran. I would hope people that have a chance to come to know us for who they are and then make their own decision.
Did it feel good being in the Oval Office up here?
It felt familiar.
Yeah. Mike Pence, the author of So Help Me God, thank you so much for taking the time. Really appreciate it.
Great, Alex.
Thank you very much.
Our thanks to Vice President Mike Pence. Now, to my favorite part, Star Trek, The Next Generation, which was my favorite show as a kid. They brought everybody back for Star Trek Picard. They had the big finale this week at the IMAX at the Grove. I desperately wanted to go. Amazingly, they let me go. Amazingly, they put me in the first spot on the red carpet, and I got to talk to my childhood heroes. So here is our story about Star Trek Picard.
Mr. Stewart, sir.
Patrick Stewart is celebrating the role of a lifetime, Jean-Luc Picard.
What began over 35 years ago ends tonight.
Star Trek The Next Generation began in 1987.
Engage.
Star Trek Picard is ending in 2023.
Engage.
Thank you so much for what you've done. Thank you for this show. On behalf of the fans.
I've been obsessed since I was a little boy.
This was me as a little kid. This is my all-time favorite show. I dressed as you for like 4 years.
My fellow fans cheering on the crew, an IMAX screening of the finale.
Nothing else in my career, nothing else in my life has had an impact like this, being part of this, and I say part of it.
Right.
That was always my insistence. We are an ensemble.
Because I need you. All of you.
The entire TNG ensemble is back. Jonathan Frakes as Will Riker, LeVar Burton as Geordi LaForge, Marina Sirtis as Deanna Troi, Michael Dorn as Worf, Gates McFadden as Beverly Crusher, and Brent Spiner as Data.
I'm curious for sort of the emotions happening inside of you on this night at this moment.
Joy. That is the emotion.
I am savoring the moments.
If anybody told me that I'd be still doing this 35 years later, I'd say, you're crazy. That's not going to happen.
Space, a final frontier.
Gene Roddenberry created the original Star Trek in the 60s with a simple promise.
To boldly go where no one has gone before.
There have been 12 different series, including Star Trek Voyager, where we first saw Jeri Ryan play Seven of Nine. She's now one of the stars of Star Trek Picard.
What do you think is the legacy of Star Trek itself?
I think it's ultimately hope. You know, it shows us if we learn to accept each other, and not only accept but appreciate each other's differences, not fear each other and not hate each other and not resent each other.
What do you think is the legacy of Star Trek?
fairness.
It includes everybody. And I think that's the whole thing, is that there's just nobody that's left out from Star Trek.
What do you think is the legacy of Star Trek?
I think that there's a world in which there's no racism and no sexism, and everybody can read, and there's no money, and people respect each other. What Roddenberry represented in the 60s. If people would listen, he had the right message.
How do you feel?
Almost human.
A consistent theme throughout Star Trek? What does it mean to be human?
You will now answer to the charge of being a grievously savage race.
What has this show, Jean-Luc Picard, taught you about humanity?
Never give up. Fight.
What it's like to be part of something that's so much bigger than myself.
On and off screen, this crew sticks together.
It's like no time had gone by, because we're all really close friends. We see each other all the time, and they just had on different clothes.
We are a family, and we have been for many years.
One that took a generation to grow.
This season features the kids of our favorite characters, essentially the next generation.
Geordi.
LeVar Burton's actual daughter, Mika, is his on-screen daughter, a fellow Starfleet engineer.
I know friends who watched Star Trek with their parents, who watched it with their parents, and the fact that we can trace that and Star Trek is still so beloved since its inception, that's the legacy in itself, and I'm so excited and honored to continue it.
That's my kid.
What have you learned about humanity from Geordi LaForge?
That no matter how Fakata everything looks, it's all going to turn out okay in the end.
Only if you have an engineer, though.
In the show, the LaForges secretly brought back to life their old starship, the Enterprise D, as a side project.
Thanks for fixing up the Enterprise.
Yeah.
We love seeing it, you guys back on there together.
It's a little DIY project.
DIY.
Doors opened, and it was just like you felt. It was very, very emotional.
I preferred the weapon systems on the E. Additional phaser arrays, torpedo.
Worf.
She is perfect, Geordi.
That to me was mind-boggling. I mean, I got a little choked up because I remember the day I first saw that 35 years ago, and I had that same feeling.
Showrunner Terry Metalis made all this possible. He now wants to lead a spin-off series called Star Trek Legacy.
It's about Seven of Nine. It's about Jack Crusher. It's about the LaForge sisters. It's about what else is going on in the galaxy with the Deep Space Nine characters, the rest of the Voyager characters.
And don't forget about the TNG crew.
Honestly, some of these characters I'm not ready to say goodbye to. You know, I think in a lot of ways, Jonathan Frakes, LeVar Burton, Michael Dorn, Gates McFadden, they've just never been better. They're at the top of their game. And I want to see more.
Fans making Star Trek Legacy trend on Twitter every week. Picard on Paramount Plus is one of Nielsen's top 10 streaming shows. Alex Kurtzman is another Star Trek EP.
Is Star Trek Legacy going to happen?
Anything's possible. We've heard the fans loud and clear. There's obviously more story to tell, so we'll see.
In the meantime, fans are enjoying the present.
What do you think is Star Trek's legacy?
Us, the fans, for sure.
Our thanks to the cast of Star Trek Picard. How cool was that? Now, we want to give you a little bit of a preview of next week's show. We're going to do a long half-hour sit-down with Arnold Schwarzenegger, one of our favorite guests. He's been in the news recently for a bunch of different things, but locally, he's been in the news for this pothole that he filled, which was actually a trench, and SoCal Gas said it was a trench that people were actively working on. He said it's not. Got a lot of attention, so we asked him about that. Here's a clip of him talking about that.
I was riding down with my bicycle, and I said, oh my God, I could have wiped out here. I called my buddies and said, can you pick up some asphalt for me and bring it? I'm going to meet you at 10:30 down there at this trench, and there's potholes. There was two of them. I filled the trench, I filled the pothole, I just pounded it down, drove over it with our vehicles a few times, and that was it. And then the misinformation started. This was actually a service trench. A service trench is something that when you're still working on it, but they stopped working on it. So there was no one working on it, so there was a lie.
So we're going to hear a lot more from Arnold Schwarzenegger next week. We're going to go to this conference that he's hosting at USC about anti-Semitism. We're going to go with him to this energy event at Altice for solar panels. We're going to talk to him about his new book, his new TV show, his new fitness app, and plus, you know, look forward. Arnold Schwarzenegger next week. But we end this week with a tribute to Richard Reardon, the former mayor of Los Angeles, last Republican to lead the city of Los Angeles, died this week at 92 after a life well lived. He took over the City of Angels after the tumultuous riots. He led the city from a businessman's perspective and helped rebuild after the 1994 Northridge quake, and was very well liked by people on both sides of the aisle. Among the folks who really loved him was Rick Caruso, who just ran for mayor, was endorsed by Reardon, who was appointed as police commissioner by Reardon. He joined us this week on Fox 11 Los Angeles. Here's a clip of his conversation with myself and Marla Tejas.
What do you think is Richard Reardon's legacy in Los Angeles?
I think it's golden. I think his legacy is he woke up every day and did what was right for the people he was serving, and that worked.
And how will you work to honor his legacy and the work that you do moving forward?
Continuing, I think it's a great question, continuing doing what I'm doing. He was a very charitable guy, supported a lot of the things I believed in that he believed in, and just working every day to make the city a better city, because we both love the city. And Dick Reardon loved Los Angeles.
Dick Reardon did love Los Angeles, and we're grateful to him for his leadership of this city. That's all for this week. Again, Arnold Schwarzenegger for the half hour next week. Thanks for listening to the Issue Is podcast. Please like us, subscribe, send us your comments. We really appreciate that, and hope you'll tell other people about our show. I'm Alex Michelson. Have a great week.